And we'll go over those five woes. And then the end of chapter 3 is the prayer of Habakkuk. And the prayer, like I said, displaying faith throughout the whole prayer. And just an absolute amazing showing of faith by Habakkuk on his part. So I hope we can get some good comments out of this. We will have to move pretty fast, go through it pretty quickly, I think, to get through it. I might sum up the five woes instead of reading those to save some time. But and I might call on you guys to read, so that would be a big help. We're going to try to read a lot of the text. We might skip over some portions. As far as background information, we have seen that through the Old Testament period, as Judah alone, we have Zephaniah who is prophesying to Judah. We have Nahum was pronouncing judgment on the Ninevites and Nineveh. And then we have Habakkuk, which was a prophet filled with troubling questions. And Habakkuk is different than the other prophets of his day and prophets in general, because normally with a relationship between God and a prophet, you have God revealing something to that prophet and that prophet going and telling the people of God what God wants them to do or whatever the revelation may be. But on Habakkuk's situation, we have Habakkuk kind of bringing some requests and some complaints before God and God responding to Habakkuk. So it's a different relationship. It's really interesting to see how Habakkuk is different than a lot of the other prophets. And it brings a different light to prophecy. And he really has a different relationship than a lot of the other prophets. Concerning the name Habakkuk, it means embrace. And some people have commented that that has some significance to the meaning of the book and that the whole book is based around embrace and to embrace. But I think that's totally irrelevant to the theme of the book and the main points of it and the highlights of the book. But Habakkuk does mean embrace or to embrace. I believe the correct pronunciation is Habakkuk. I have a kind of funny story about pronouncing it. It's a tongue twister when you first hear it. And I knew a guy from the Bronx last year at Florida College. He was from New York and he was from the Bronx. And he definitely acted the part of someone from the Bronx. And he was a new Christian. And he was probably one of the most zealous people I had ever come into contact with. And he had just a really neat accent. He was from Puerto Rico, I believe. So just a bunch of different cultures going on there. And he was a new convert, and he came up to me one day, just one of the most amazing people I've ever met as far as studying the Bible when he's become baptized. He studied all the time. And he came up to me one day, and he was like, "John, I've found this amazing book called Habakkuk," or something like that. And I was like, "Oh, I think it's Habakkuk, Roger." So, but I think it's Habakkuk. I mean, I might be wrong, but we'll pronounce it that way. But he was true. He was definitely right. This is an amazing book, and hope we can get something profitable out of it. Let's start reading the text then. Start in verse 1. This is the burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. And could I get somebody to read verses 2 through 4 and speak pretty loudly? Anybody volunteer to do that? All right. Thanks, Trevor. 2 through 4.
"How long, O Lord, will I call for help and you will not hear? I cry out to you violence, yet you do not ignore it, and justice is never upheld. For the wicked surround the righteous, therefore justice comes out with burden."
So we have Habakkuk raising these complaints to God. What do we have anybody that would like to kind of sum up what Habakkuk's trying to say? What kind of feelings he's having right now?
Well, he's saying, how long is this going to last? Mm-hmm. How long have these been this all the time?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. I think it's really interesting because we could totally relate to Habakkuk in this. Just you know, Habakkuk in verse 2, he says he's crying out violence. You know, there's this violence going out. There's violence all the time. There's justice not happening. Justice is not happening. People are being taken advantage of, and wickedness is surrounding the righteous. The wicked people are surrounding the righteous and having their way with the righteous. So the good people are being taken advantage of. The good people are at the, you know, are taking the short end of the stick. You know, there nothing is happening for the good people. And doesn't that seem contrary to the way it should go? I mean, I would be troubled by that too. And Habakkuk is. He's upset. You know that he doesn't see God acting in this way. You know, what are you going to do? Your people are being taken advantage of, wicked people, and nothing's happening, Lord. So please help us, you know. And we're going to read the Lord's reply in verses 5 through 11. Mr. Fields, would you read that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Look among the nations and watch. Evening wolves. Their chart. I'm sorry, I can't see this real clear.
Oh, that's fine. I'll finish up there. See, you're in verse 8. See there. I'll just start in verse 8. Their horses are also swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. So what do we see God saying here? Can anyone sum up what God is trying to tell Habakkuk here?
I'll take care of it.
That's exactly right.
And it'll be through the Chaldeans and Babylonians.
Yeah, the Chaldeans are the same as the Babylonians. And you could just picture Habakkuk making this complaint, and God saying, you know what, Habakkuk, I'm taking care of it. I'm working this whole time that you think I'm not. You know, I've been working, and even if I explain these things to you, if I explain every single thing, you're still not going to understand it, Habakkuk. But Habakkuk, you know, he needs to understand these things. He's like, you know, I need to understand what's going on. You know, is there going to be help? You know, from you, God, are you going to do anything about this? And he says, yes, I'm sending the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, and they're going to punish. They're going to judge. They're going to destroy. They're going to come. They're going to, verse 10, they're going to laugh at kings. Princes are scorned by them. They're going to take every stronghold. They're going to seize everything, take over everything. And then at the end of the day, they're going to ascribe it to their God, and they're going to give the glory to their God, lowercase g. And on top of all this wickedness, all this slaughtering that's going to go on and taking over this, and in a sense judging Judah, they're going to ascribe it to a God other than Yahweh. And so utterly, it paints a big picture of wickedness, taking over Judah, and in a sense judging Judah. And so, as a human, we're thinking about this, and I think Habakkuk's on the same page as us. We're thinking, you know, how can an evil nation take over Judah, the nation that's, you know, partially trying to serve the righteous God, you know, the real God? And, you know, they might not be perfect, but they're a whole lot more righteous than this other nation that, you know, that thrives on wickedness. And then at the end of the day, they say, yeah, this is our statue. This is our idol. We did it all for that. So Habakkuk is definitely confused, and I don't really blame him. So let's read Habakkuk's response to this in verses 12 through 17. Would somebody like to read that? Jeremy? Thanks, man.
They dug up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragon. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their nets.
Thanks, Jeremy. So what do we see Habakkuk saying in response to the Lord? What do we see Habakkuk as feeling about the Lord's response? That He's going to take over Judah with a wicked nation. What do you think Habakkuk feels about that?
He says, Lord, I wanted you to do something about it, but this isn't what I have, not what I have
mine. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't seem fair. I mean, is that what we would all think? I mean, I think that's what I would think. Just looking at it from a narrow point of view, just, you know, how can that happen? And we have so many situations of that today, how wickedness goes on, and we just ask questions, you know, where is God, you know? And in verse 14, I can almost hear Habakkuk saying that. He says, why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? He says, you're our ruler, God. Where are you? You know, let yourself be seen. Verse 13, I think, is a good verse. It says, you are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on these who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person that is more righteous than he? So the wicked people are just beating up the righteous people, per se. And just, you know, nothing's happening for the righteous people. They have nobody to put their trust in. Well, they do, but they're not putting their trust in. They might be putting their trust in God. But the fact is that they're getting ganged up from on every side from people that are wicked. And there needs to be something happening here, God. This is what Habakkuk's saying. Verse 16, therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by their share is sumptuous and their food is plenty. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? Are you going to let this nation get away with this and continue to do what they're doing, this injustice and this wickedness? You're the person who can stop it, God, and we need your help to stop this. We can't do it, you know. And this is just a humanly perspective, I really think. And
to understand that God does things according to His will. In time, He'll take care of it. Habakkuk doesn't think He's doing going faster than that, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And
God will take care of it in time.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it says. Scott, did you have something? Yeah. So he answers a question, and that raises another question. And so Habakkuk's even more confused than he was when he started.
What else would he use except someone that was more powerful, someone who had no regard for human life, pay attention to it?
Yeah.
So he uses a wicked nation to thrash out the wickedness that characterizes the people of Judah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. He uses the wickedness to take the wickedness out of Judah as well. And you know, I think as humans we look for divine intervention immediately. You know, sometimes we look for God to come down and settle the disputes, you know, between us. You know, but God may not work in that way. You know, God works in mysterious ways, and He might choose to do something that would be weird to us, you know. But in His head, and I mean, it works, you know, and He knows it works. And we need to keep on reading because it explains itself. And that's one of the great things about this book that I like so much. It becomes so clear here in a minute for Habakkuk. So I wanted to point this first verse out of chapter 2. I think this is really interesting. He says, I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what He will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected. So this is like he's making these complaints to God. And then he finishes with this statement, and I will wait to see what He will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected. I think that's a small showing of faith right there. Just a small showing of, you know I'm going to be corrected. I know I'm wrong. You know, I've said all these things. I've made this complaint to God. But I know you're going to throw it back in my face. And I know I'm going to be wrong about this when it all comes back to it. And I'm ready to be corrected now, Lord. And I'm going to wait here. So I think that's just a humble way to approach things with God. And just an interesting statement by Habakkuk there. Would somebody like to read verses 2 through 4, the beginning of the Lord's response to Habakkuk? All right, thanks. So what's God saying? What is God telling Habakkuk right here? He's saying, write this vision. Write it down. I'm going to reveal this to you. Said, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will come. And verse 4, I think, is one of the verses that I think sums up the attitude that we all need to have. And one of the themes of this book says, behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. So, you know, Habakkuk has been making these complaints to God. God's giving him an answer. It makes Habakkuk even more confused. Habakkuk kind of raises a different question. How could you do this with an evil nation? And God comes back and says, behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him. The just live by faith. Says Habakkuk, you know, just like back in verse 5 of chapter 1, he says, for I will work a work in your days, which you would not believe though it were told to you. He told him at the beginning that I'm going to try to explain this to you, what I'm doing. But even if I tell you every little thing, you're still not going to understand it, Habakkuk. And at the end of all this confusion, all these responses from God, God patient with Habakkuk. God says, you know, Habakkuk, the only way you're going to be able to live with this is if you have faith. You know, that's the answer right there. And you've got to have faith in me because you're not going to understand this. Anybody else want to make some comments about that?
God works in His own time. He's not confined with what we think. And as you mentioned a while ago, sometimes we think God ought to do something now. Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't have to do it now. Now may not be the time for it, but He knows the time. And that time will come, and He'll do what He says He will.
Definitely. Definitely. And in our lives, you know, we might need something right now. We might think we need something right now. And we're maintaining a righteous lives with God. And that relief might not come. It might come in different forms, you know, but it might never come. You know, it might not come until the judgment day when we receive our, you know, reward for the trials that we've been through, the things that we've gone through. You know, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it may be no to the way that we've made up in our minds, you know, that we think God should solve it. But ultimately everyone will be judged by God. No one will escape the judgment of God. And that's an important point that we need to take with us through our lives, that, you know, no matter what happens, you know, judgment will come, and you have to have faith that God will take care of the loose ends. He will tie up all the knots, and He'll make everything come together. And we just have to have faith, because that's how the just shall live.
So,
patience.
And we ought not be like the person who said, Lord, give me patience right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. If you ask for something, you have to be ready for the answer, you know, even if it's not the right answer that you've been expecting. That's a really good quote. I like that. Well, we're going into this point where the Lord gives five woes to the people of Judah. And He says, write this down in a vision. And we have some woes that are given. I'm going to try to sum these up. Let's read through the text and we'll find them. In the middle of verse 6, it says, woe to him who increases what is not his. How long? To him who loads himself with many pledges. Will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Let's see. I'll go back over these. Let's see. Verse 9 says, woe to him who covets evil, gain for his own house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. So woe to someone who covets evil, gain for himself, that he may gain something, you know, that he covets other people's things so that he can get higher in life. Verse 12 says, woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. So woe to him who kills all these people so that he can have a city. You know, that's exactly what the Babylonians and Chaldeans are about to do. And God is pronouncing judgment on that. He's saying that's wrong. In verse 15, it says, woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to the bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also be drunk and be exposed as uncircumcised. So he's pronouncing judgment on that, trying to get his neighbor to get drunk so that he can take advantage of him. And that's exactly what these wicked people are doing. They're taking advantage of these righteous people. And it's not fair. It's not fair to anyone who's righteous. And we all can see that. And verse 18 through 20 is just makes a woe to idols, pretty much. It really just makes idols look really dumb, really pointless, just absolutely ridiculous in the sight of God. So verse 18 says, what profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its own mold should trust in it. To make mute idols, woe to him who says to wood, awake, the silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent before him. So, that just makes idols look absolutely ridiculous.
The whole idea of making idols and images according to their own concept. They make it.
I think it's very ironic to see verse 20 says, but the Lord is in his holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before him. He says, you know, and he had just got done saying that there's no breath in these statues. There's nothing that they can do. They say, teach us, you know, and do these things for us. And they just sit there, you know, they're idols. They're just made out of wood or whatever they're made out of. And they can't do anything. And they're silent. They're silent. And then the Lord says, but I'm in my holy temple, and all the earth keep silence before me. I think it's very ironic that that the silence comes from us. And let me rephrase that. That the Lord is working. The Lord is making things happen. Where the idol is not, the idol can only be silent. You know, so. The difference between the idols is the idols, all they can do is be silent. The Lord, He's in His holy temple, and we should be silent before Him. You know, we can do nothing without Him because He is the man, He is the action. You know, He is the Lord, He is in His holy temple, and we should make the silence because He is the one who's making the things happen, who's raising up the Chaldeans, who's taking care of his people, who is protecting righteousness, even though it may not look that way. Do you have any comments about that? That's a lot of stuff that we just went over, the woes. I know I blew over that. Anybody have any comments? Yeah. Where was that?
Isaiah.
Yeah. There are so many times throughout the Bible that he just takes a moment and kind of goes on idols and shows how totally ridiculous they are, and how that people, like you said, will take the last thing that they have and they'll make an image out of it. And they made it, they created it, and they worship it. And it's just ridiculous. It really is. There were some other woes. I know we've been dwelling on the idols. There were some other woes. Let me read the main gist of those again. It said, "Woe to the proud, the possessed with the lust of conquest and plunder." There was also woe to their efforts to build a permanent empire through cruelty and godless gain. So these people that want to slaughter people and just take over the whole world for godless gain. There was also a woe to those who build cities with bloodshed. Also a woe to those with cruelty in their treatment of those who they conquered. So the people who are just cruel to humans. Cruel, there's so many descriptions. There were some descriptions in here that I think we skipped over, but just some descriptions of cruelty that God does not agree with, and He places those in these woes. He says he's going to judge these people, and he's going to do it through the Chaldeans. But it all comes back to verse 20, I think. Lord is in his holy temple, and we should keep silence before him. So many times we think we need to be the ones involved in making things happen. We need to be the people that are making things happen, But it takes a really humble person to put the ball in God's court, even when the ball's already in his court, And that's what we need to do as individuals, I think, is we need to give God the ball even though he already has it, And we need to realize that, we can't do anything, and that he is in his holy temple, and we should respect that. Any comments before we get into chapter 3? All right. Chapter 3. The best chapter of this book. Habakkuk's prayer to God. So he's been expecting this to come back in his face. And he's been expecting this to be corrected. And he's finally been corrected. God told him that the just live by faith, and that's what you have to do, Habakkuk. You have to have faith in me. That's the only way out of this. That you're never going to understand what's going on with me and how I'm going to make this all come together. You just have to have faith, Habakkuk. Let's read the first seven verses of chapter 3. Somebody read that for me. Mr. Burns, would you do that? So what do we see Habakkuk saying in his prayer in these first seven verses?
I remember what happened in the past. I remember that God has taken the situation in hand and has dealt with it.
Yeah.
And so now he realizes that's what he needs to do. He put it in God's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize God will take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's humility right there. He's admitting that he can't do it without God, and that he was wrong. in thinking that God would answer his complaints in his time, in Habakkuk's time, in Habakkuk's way. And he realizes he was wrong. What else is he saying? I think verse 6 is a really strong verse. He says, "He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills bowed down. His ways are everlasting." You know, just could Habakkuk do that? No. Would the hills bow down to Habakkuk? No. God's ways are everlasting. That's what Habakkuk's saying. Verse 7, "The curtains of the land of Midian trembled." And let's keep reading. He throws in some stuff. He throws in some pleas. He's definitely showing humility, but he's also definitely throwing in things like that in wrath. Remember mercy. You know, that's important. He realizes that he needs mercy, and that God is going to be angry with people sometimes, and that. But at the same time that God's angry, he needs mercy. So that's a very. Thanks for bringing that up, Tracy. Any other things that I skipped over that need to be brought out that you see, please bring them out. All right, then let's keep reading. Verse 8 through 16. Somebody read that. How many times have we heard this word "trembled" and this attitude of just fear of God? And what happens when you've been complaining to God and God sets you straight and you feel absolutely ridiculous for the things that you thought God would do, and God's saying, you know, you just got to trust me. And I don't know, there are some other words to describe, but "trembled" is pretty good. I think that's what a lot of us would do. Just, you know, we would be embarrassed. We would tremble. We would have a lot of fear in our minds because we're totally hopeless. And the person with power is God. The being with power is God. Yeah, tremble. Yeah. So many instances. Whenever God speaks directly to people, I think that's the reaction that happens most often. It's trembling and just being very humble, because can't do anything about you have to be humble in that situation. Verse 10, I think, is a really, really neat thought. "The mountain saw you and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hand on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear." Verse 12, "You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. Verse 13, "You went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation with your anointed." Just a lot of marching, a lot of running through of things, a lot of trembling. this idea. And verse 16, "When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in a day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops." Just humility and realizing that God is in power right there in his prayer. Let's read verses 17 through 19. And this is an absolutely amazing declaration of faith right here by Habakkuk. And this is something that we we definitely need to have in our lives. We could read this every day, every morning that we wake up or something, but we need to have this type of faith. And with this type of faith that Habakkuk has and shows in these next three verses, we could do a lot of things. Let's read 17 through 19. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the field yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet, and He will make me walk on high hills. I mean, does it get better than that in declaring your faith to God? And, you know, Habakkuk is saying, whether there's no fig, whether there's no fruit on the vines, there's no labor, there's no olive, you know, there's no food, there's no herd, there's no flock. Everything goes wrong. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord still. That's powerful, I think. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's what I didn't have that footnote, but I was aware that this was some type of song, and I mean, definitely there's emotion there. Thanks for bringing that up, Scott. And what, I don't know how better you could declare your faith to God. There are definitely some things that come to mind when you're thinking about Habakkuk's faith. You know, we think of Job, who was tempted, and had so many things happen to him. And the difference between Job, I guess, is Job was suffering, individually. You know, this nation, Judah, is suffering as a nation. But the temptations are still the same. The trials are still the same. And it's interesting to see how people deal with the suffering. I want to bring a couple of thoughts together here in a conclusion. What things can we take from this book? I think one important thing that we need to take is the supremacy of God's judgment upon the wicked. No one will escape the judgment of God, and everything will be fall into judgment according to God. And we need to rest assured in that, you know, that the wicked will be judged, the righteous will be judged. You know, everybody will come into judgment through God. God would use the Chaldeans to punish the wicked Judah, and Chaldea would be destroyed for its own wickedness eventually. Another thing that we see is that evil is self-destructive, and it destroys itself. And that's the way evil is. You know, it can't support itself. It tears itself apart. Corruptness, you know, it just doesn't work. It's going to fall apart. And probably the best thing that we can take from this is the value of faith. And what a powerful declaration of faith that we have through Habakkuk. And I think we can definitely take the faith of Habakkuk and put that into our lives. And we definitely can do a lot of work for God if we have this attitude of putting the ball in God's court and letting Him do the work and us keeping silence before Him. So I think, was that the second bell? All right. Thanks so much for your attention.